While you're getting settled, I'll just note that we're at the Minnesota Court of Appeals this morning on February 7th. This is the third of four cases that we have scheduled today. I am Judge Wheelock, sitting on a panel with Judges Sleater and Schmidt, and we're in courtroom 100 of the Minnesota Judicial Center. Our oral arguments are live streamed, as well as recorded. Oral argument is recorded in an oral format and will be available on the Judicial Branch's website within 24 hours. And Marshall, please call our third case.
Now calling A231183, in re the matter of Ossawinamakee Road Homeowners Appellant versus Commissioner of City of Breezy Point, Respondent, Office of Administrative Hearings, Respondent.
And counsel, as you probably know, you'll each have 15 minutes to present your initial argument. Counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a timer on the center podium, and the podium can be adjusted, so feel free to do that. I would ask that each of you introduce yourself and identify who your client is so that we can have that for our recordings. And counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, may it please the court. I'm John Parrington. I am counsel for the petitioners' appellants, which is a homeowners group of homeowners along Ossawinamakee Road and outside of Breezy Point, Minnesota, in Crow Wing County. I am also one of the petitioners. Your Honor, this is an appeal from a decision by the ALJ, which was reviewed by the district court and confirmed in an appeal from the district court decision. The standard of review is generally the typical standards of review of whether the decision was arbitrary and capricious, and that's the same as the district court. But one thing I want to point out that I think is significant is the district court, in reviewing the decision of the ALJ, is governed by the detachment statute itself at 414.07, which includes, in addition to the basic criteria for detachment, the provision that the district court can reverse if the decision of the ALJ, if it decides that the decision is an unreasonable disregard of the best interest of the territory affected. We raised that issue in our brief. Never discussed by the district court. Nothing discussed by the district court in the decision. Somewhat similar to that is the fact that we requested of the district court that they do a site visit. If you read most of the ALJ decisions on detachment under the statute, they almost always make a site visit. The ALJ didn't make a site visit. She told us off the record that she didn't need to see the property to make her decision. No discussion of that in her decision, no discussion of that in the district court decision. Your Honor, what I would like to do very quickly is go over some aspects of the criteria for detachment under 414.06. There's generally about seven criteria, and the city stipulated to a number of them. But the ones that were really an issue were whether the property was needed for reasonably anticipated future development. And those words are significant, reasonably anticipated, and also whether the municipality is able to carry on the functions of a government without undue hardship, significant undue hardship, whether or not the property has already been developed for urban residential purposes, which is part and parcel of the final issue, which is whether or not the party's rural or urban. Let me talk just a little bit about the easier issues, or at least to me, the more straightforward issues. And that is, first of all, whether or not the property is needed, whether or not there is any property, and if there is available, if there is property, is it needed for reasonably anticipated future development? Jerry Bonesack, who is the city planner, said that there was no property along the road that's available for future development. The person who, Mr. Zierden, who is zoning and planning, said there's no property available. It wasn't exactly right. There was one lot, maybe two lots were available. There's nothing in the comprehensive plan that says it's needed for future development. Nothing in any of the city records that say it was needed for future development. The interesting issue is, who's it future development by? If you look at all the ALJ decisions on detachment, they talk about whether the city needs that land for development for city purposes. Nothing to suggest that in the record. So the city switched very quickly, and the ALJ seemed to buy the argument that maybe somebody else would like to come and buy the property and build a lake home there. And therefore, it's needed for purchase by either some private party to build their own private lake home. That's not what the statute's intended to protect. It's intended to protect whether the city needs the property, not whether a private party needs it. It also talks about whether it's reasonably anticipated, and there was no evidence that the city had anticipated. They'd just come out with a new 2020 comprehensive plan, nothing in there about needing any of the property along the road.
But Council, for you to prevail, you have to both meet the future development that we have to reverse on that and reverse on the rural in character. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so I want to get into the rural and character.
I will, very quickly.
Okay.
Be there very shortly. The other issue was whether the municipality was able to continue the functions of government without undue hardship. Evidence on trial was presented that just before we had the hearing, the city had paid off $700,000 on a note that was not due for another 3 or 4 years. They'd been able to have such excess revenue that they could have $700,000. The tax base of the property seemed to be detached was about $100,000. So I don't know how that you could argue that. Also, if you look at what's happened to the property taxes, they went up from 22 to 23, almost $435,000. One of my arguments was, and unique to the COVID and lake property, there were a lot more properties sold, a lot more building permits issued, which would presumably produce a greater tax base.
This parcel of land, though, accounted for, I think the ALJ said 4% of the city's property tax.
Yes, just under for about 3.9%.
Which also would account for one full-time police officer. Is that right?
That's what the city said.
Okay, and so how is that then not an undue hardship if they would have to figure out, like, cut a cop?
Well, I don't think if you go from what the city said is that they wouldn't be able to hire a new police officer.
Okay.
And I'm not sure necessarily whether there's a need to hire a new police officer. Since the hearing, they've hired 1.5 time police officers, but I don't think that that's an undue hardship to not hire one more police officer in a town of 2,700 people.
Although the population goes significantly up in the summer, right?
Well, it does, and Your Honor, and all due respect, it goes up in large part because of the resort. There's Breezy Point Resort there that has 2,000 to 3,000 beds. And I would suggest, Your Honor, and I don't have any data, but I would suggest about 70% of the police activity is occasioned by the resort. And I suggested to them, if there's a financial issue, why don't we put a sales tax on the resort? Well, no, we can't do that. Lutzen has a sales tax. Other resorts have sales tax. Bloomington has a sales tax, but wouldn't even consider a sales tax. And partially, I think that's because there's always a member of the family that owns the resort on the council and many of the council activities. But I'll move into, Your Honor, into the part about rural. I suggested to the ALJ that we should at least initially look at the census definition of rural. And the ALJ said, no, census doesn't apply. We don't look at the census. But, you know, if you go through Minnesota statutes, there's innumerable statutes that talk about census criteria. The census provides, U.S. Census provides, that if you have over 5,000 residents, and I don't remember exactly the number.
Council, I have a question for you. So as we're looking at this determination that the parcels were not rural, We look at whether or not they were supported by substantial evidence. And right. I understand you're suggesting that there was evidence that that appellants wish the ALJ had actually looked at and taken into consideration. But what can you point us to what your argument would be about whether or not the evidence relied on was substantial or not, and if not, why wasn't it?
Well, the ALJ, in all candor, Your Honor, never said what the criteria was that she relied upon. What she said was what she's not going to allow and what she thinks is irrelevant. Never says anything about what exactly she relies upon in arriving at the decision. And that's part of the big issue here, it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland, that rural is what I say rural is. It doesn't matter what you bring to me. We don't have city water. We don't have city sewer. There's no plan to give us city water and city sewer. And yet, if you look at, for example, the statute that provides that cities can have urban districts and rural districts, for a rural district to become an urban district, it has to have city water and city sewer. There was a detachment proceeding approximately 9 years ago called the Rash decision. And, Your Honors, I don't have it cited, and I apologize that. I thought it was part and parcel of the Ebnet decision that I cited, but there was actually a separate trial on the Rash decision. That's OAH11-0330-20499. And if you read the ALJ's decision there, you'd think you're reading the same decision for the Ossawinamakee homeowners. And so anyway, If you apply the census criteria, rural.
I wanted to follow with Judge Wheeler. I'm not sure you answered her question. And as I'm looking at the order, the impression I got is you thought you don't know what the basis was, but the court referenced, and this is under B, prior cases, at first the definition, so she cited to Merriam-Webster, which is a common requirement
thing
that we use when it's undefined. And then she also referenced prior cases have also considered the use of property zoning restrictions, the proximity of the area proposed, detachment to other uses, density, and access, and then went into the arguments and the facts that were in the record.
Right.
So to answer Judge Wheelock's question, if you can, what specifically was wrong with the evidence that was in the record the court considered when it came up with the conclusion that it's not rural?
Jerry Bonesack, all the city witnesses said the following. The city is a municipality. Municipalities, by definition, are urban. Therefore, all the land within a municipality is urban. Therefore, your property cannot be rural. Now, if you adopt that argument, which it seems that the ALJ did, the statute's meaningless, because you're detaching from municipality. And if a municipality is automatically all urban, you can never detach. It renders the statute meaningless, which makes no sense. I would also suggest that state statutes have used urban and rural definitions under the census for almost 50 years before the statute was ever enacted, and they're used again and again and again. The city managers, also the city witnesses, by the way, the city witnesses, none of them live in the, well, the mayor lived in the city. Jerry Bonesack, city planner, didn't live in the city. Mr. Zierden didn't live in the city, planning and zoning. I'm trying to think who else, Mr. Wusso, city manager, didn't live in the city. None of the people lived in, major witnesses, except for the mayor, lived in the city. But after they talked about the property being totally urban, then they said, well, maybe it's suburban. And the ALJ adopted that maybe it's suburban. Well, suburban's not in the statute. It doesn't mention suburban in the statute. And even if the property is suburban, what's it a suburb of? Is it a suburb of some other little town nearby? It's not a suburb of anything. I know, Your Honor, I at one time, a long time ago, had an explosion case up by where Your Honor sat, up in Olivia. I think you'd be surprised to know that because it's a city, you're automatically an urban community. I don't think anybody in the city of Olivia would think of Olivia being an urban community. And yet you have city water, you have city sewer, you have a city library, which Breezy Point doesn't have. We don't
can
have...
Can I just follow up? Isn't that precisely, though, the argument respondents making the ALJ did, that it's for purposes of detachment we're looking at it, because I'm confident that you're correct in terms of what residents of Olivia would believe they are or not, but we're looking at a detachment statute and the provisions. Isn't that the context with which you would need to look to determine, and where we would need to determine whether there was substantial evidence to support the decision?
Right, but I think the important issue, Your Honor, and I think there's an issue for the residents here along the road, but I think it's an issue for the state and for the detachment statute. Because if you go through the detachment statute, you can find four cases where they have the same set of facts as another four cases, and the ALJ in one four cases says, oh, no, that's not rural, not in my opinion rural. And the other four cases, the ALJ says, oh, in my opinion, it is rural. If you go into the Rash case that I talked about, which is right across the lake from us, that's rural. If you go into the Ebnet case, which is just across the lake from us a mile, that was found rural. And yet the Ebnet case, Ebnet's had a gravel mining pit on the place. They had a shooting reserve on the place. The Pat Ebnet has a place where he raises turkeys and animals to self to restaurants, and yet the statute says you can't have any businesses, you can't have any, and yet they have all of that, and they're granted. And the mayor, the former mayor, she came and testified, yeah, I think that that's rural. And
Council, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So thank you for your initial argument, and we will turn to Council for respondent with 15 minutes on the clock. Again, feel free to adjust the podium. And when you are ready to begin, we'll begin, and so will the clock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Joseph Langle for the City of Breezy Point. With me is Mary Hazel, attorney from our law firm. This is a continuation of the battle of what actually is the standard here. On the one hand, we have all these Office of Administrative Hearing decisions, some prior court precedent. We have the statutory language that talks about rural in character and not developed for urban residential. Throughout this whole process, Mr. Parrington has ignored the prior OIH cases. He's ignored how they define rural in character and instead goes out on this bizarre goose chase talking about MnDOT rules and census definitions and so forth. There's not a single case, not a single OIH decision that has ever utilized those terms, has ever defined anything according
Council,
to those
can
terms.
You explain to us or tell us what you believe the standard of review is as we look at this
sure.
case before us today?
So we had obviously a contested case hearing before ALJ Palmer Denig. This court is not to decide disputed questions of fact. Findings of fact are to be reviewed under the substantial evidence test. The OIH enjoys a presumption of correctness if the agency has engaged in reasoned decision-making and its decision is supported by substantial evidence, the reviewing court is to affirm. So that's the review standard, and the district court in Crow Wing County expressly stated after reviewing the record that Judge Palmer Denig did engage in reasoned decision-making and that her decision was supported by substantial evidence. And we are asking that the same result occur here.
Council, what is the substantial evidence for the rural determination, or finding, I should say?
So the statutory factor is rural in character and not developed for urban residential. Okay, so it's that whole phrase, right? The evidence that supports it has to do with the density of the property, the degree that has been developed, the use of the property, the historical use of the property. If you look at this land, okay, we have 2 miles of lakeshore here, 2 miles of fully developed, except for 3 lots, lakeshore. This is not open pasture land or timber. This is, if you look at it from the shore, from the lake, Lake Home, Lake Home, Lake Home, 12 townhouses, cabins. I mean, just an uninterrupted line of lakeshore property. Outside of those three lots, it can't get more developed. It's zoned R2, medium density residential. It has to be residential. Nobody's going to be putting in any commercial business there. Nobody's going to be putting in ag. It's prohibited. All that can be there is residential. That's what's there now. That's what's been there for literally decades. This land was platted, and this all goes into that factor. The land was platted starting back in the 60s. There were resorts there before that, little mom-and-pop style resorts. Now we have 89 parcels on 84 acres, 5 plats, 12 townhomes, 51 single-family homes, and 3 undeveloped parcels. Those facts are what is the evidence underlying that factor. It's not rural. If you look at it, you guys have seen Lakeshore. It looks like fully developed Lakeshore, just like the other side of the lake looks like fully developed Lakeshore, and just like Pelican Lake in Breezy Point is fully developed on the west side,
Mr. Lane,
where the resort is.
Can I follow up with that? You just mentioned answering Judge Schmidt's question, and you're referring to the "and." So rural in character and not developed for urban residential. So is it true you could be rural in character, but it is developed for urban residential, and hence the result would be the same?
Well, and I've never seen the OAH look at it that way. They look at it as kind of one or the other, rural or, but it is an and in the statute, rural in character and not developed. So,
well, and the reason I'm asking, the big issue obviously continues to be, and maybe being in the business of these kind of cases, council's more aware of it than I am, that when there's no definition of urban, because the council for appellants is correct, if I go back to Olivia, are we living in an urban county? Well, heck no, we're not living in, we're living in the country, but it is residential once you're in town, obviously, because you got houses, and that's kind of what your point is here. So the big issue is, is there such a thing as developed for urban residential that is other than urban? And I suppose residential answers the question. If you got a bunch of houses next together for this purposes of this statute, that makes it urban, even though you might be an otherwise a rural community, which I'm going to guess also the same citizens up in Breezy Point don't think of themselves as living in a city. Then what's left? Well, I'm in the country. Well, yeah, but you got a lot of neighbors. So is that really the statutory difficulty here, and what is the precise answer when considering a detachment petition?
So in prior OAH cases, they kind of take on that issue. What is urban in this context? And there's a prior decision that talks about you have to look at the subject area in context. At the hearing, they talk about, well, this doesn't look like Minneapolis, doesn't look like Robbinsdale. And the ALJ said, well, it doesn't have to. That's not what the statute's getting at. If that was the case, that's a very strict, rigid sort of thing, right? That's not what the intent was. The intent under the detachment standard is to look at it in the context of the community. The prior OAH decision says even small towns have urban and even suburban areas. The key is the intensity of the development, right? And in this case, residential is all that's allowed. So it's an R2 zone. It is intensely developed for residential. Because of that, it is urban in the context of Breezy Point. It is urban in the context of the North Central Minnesota Lakes area. Does it look like Minneapolis? No. People don't spend that kind of money for a place that looks like Minneapolis. They're spending it for this neighborhood. And that's what we're talking about, is a 2-mile-long lakeshore neighborhood of lake homes, cabins, and townhomes. That intense residential development, which has been going on for decades and is being redeveloped periodically, you know, all this works, they tear down cabins and homes and they build nicer ones. That intensity is what makes this urban or suburban in the context of Breezy Point.
But just to clarify, that's not defined. So we're kind of, normally we don't read the intent in unless it's ambiguous. And then if it's ambiguous, and there's been no cases, at least that I've seen cited, that kind of come to that conclusion. We just, it seemed to be more in the ALJ decisions, well, it, this must be the intent, therefore it is. And of course, that's part of appellant's concern.
It's derived from prior OAH decisions. And, you know, there's...
And their interpretation of the statute.
Correct. So this is the entity that handles this, the statute, right?
So would you agree, though, in our review, when it comes to the part that we don't give deference to is if it's interpretation of the statute, that's the legal analysis?
I agree to a point. It's still an agency that is utilizing a term based upon its expertise as the agency that handles annexations and attachments. And there is case law, and we support it, and we reported it in our briefs, that states that agency interpretation of terms is to be given weight. Not to say that you can't decide differently, but it is to be given weight, given their expertise, given the fact that they've been working with these terms for decades, frankly. So, yeah, that's what we're going off of, that this area, because of the intensity of the residential development, is in fact urban. It looks no different than the other side of the lake, where it's lakeshore, lake homes, neighborhood, you know, it's just all Breezy Point. It looks no different. That being the case, how is it that this whole area of Breezy Point is unquestionably urban, but the strip across the lake that looks the same is not? It doesn't make any sense. It's just as intensely developed as the rest of the lake, as Pelican Lake. I mean, this is just what lakeshore looks like in Minnesota. So, yeah, if there's no ag uses, there's no, you know, which you would consider a typical rural use, there's no open land, there's no, like I said, there's no ag, there's no commercial, there's no industrial. It's an intensely developed residential use. The other factors concern, you know, the undue hardship. Nobody ever talked about hiring another police officer. The whole issue was if you take $110,000 out of a $2.7 million budget, 4%, it has an impact. It's either you could get rid of two public works employees, which is 40% of that department, big deal, or you get rid of a cop. It's not that big a force to begin with. And so those are the facts. Those are the undisputed facts. That would be the impact of losing that kind of 4% out of their budget. There are no other facts to go any other direction on that. Those facts are undisputed. This whole business about, well, you could do this tax. There's nothing in the statute that says, well, if you can generate some tax some other way, then that offsets this kind of a financial burden. That is not supported by the statute at all. And this thing about, well, they had all this excess money, that is false. The testimony at the hearing was they borrowed money from one account in the city and they used it to pay off the bond debt so that they wouldn't have to pay the interest on the bond. That's what they did. It wasn't excess funds. They have to pay it back. This still has to go back into that account, but they're trying to save money. So there is evidence in the record to support the finding, the conclusion, that this would create an undue hardship for the city if we were to lose this tax base. And then finally, this the part about needed for development. As I already said, most of this strip is developed, has been for a long time, developed, redeveloped, constantly being developed. There are three lots left, three open lots. The point, and the only point made on that issue, was those are three valuable lakeshore lots. It's not the city's going to develop them. The city doesn't do development. We just create zoning ordinances and subdivision code and create the opportunity for development. Somebody else will develop, assuming that their owners want to develop at some point. But those three lots are important in the same sense that any lakeshore lot in the city of Breezy Point is important for development. It's part of the tax base. It's part of growing the city. So, yes, they are important for that for that fact, and the record supports the fact that, you know, these three lots are vacant, and they are needed, reasonably anticipated, that they will be developed. That's it. That's all there was to that factor. It's not complicated. It's not difficult. And as the factors that are at issue here, it's probably the least of the three that are important. The big ones are the rural and not urban and the undue hardship. Undue hardship stands on its own. For that reason alone, this detachment can be denied. But there are ample facts in the record to show that this long neighborhood of Lakeshore Homes, 2 mile stretch of platted property, is intensely developed for residential purposes. It is, in the context of Breezy Point, an urban area, just to the same extent every other area in the city is developed and is urban. One last point, this is an R2 district, 2.5 acre minimum. Most of the lots out there are not that big. They're smaller than that, they're non-conforming. That's one of the smallest lot requirements in the city. The city has 5 acre, 10 acre, much bigger requirements elsewhere in the city. These lots are small, they're narrow, typical lakeshore lots. It's heavily developed, it's urban. With that, I'll rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Okay, and we will turn back to Council for appellant for 5 minutes of rebuttal. And the clock is reset. You can begin when you're ready.
Your Honor, Council talks about public works and losing a position in public works. The city doesn't maintain our street. They have an agreement with Ideal Township, which is where we want to go to maintain our street. Many people along the road don't get the snow plowed. They call the city, say, where's the plow? They say, don't call us, call Ideal Township. They're the ones who plow your road. That's part of the issue here.
But the hardship question looks at the city as a whole, not just this plot of land.
Right.
So the hardship of if they lose public works, it's a hardship for the city, not just
there's testimony there, it could lose one public works person. But if you look at the increases in revenue over the last couple of years, more than enough money to make up for any money that's been lost. Also, Your Honor, council talks about the property in the context of the city. If you look at the Rash decision, which I mentioned to you, the ALJ says you can't look at it in context of the city. First, the statute doesn't say rural in context of the city. It says rural. And the ALJ and the Rash decision says if you adopt that standard, it does a huge disservice to outside communities. Also, as Your Honor talked about, mentioned in town for your community, I want to make it clear, these properties are not in town. Council never addresses the issue anywhere of how, on some of those properties, if you're down by the lake, you're in Breezy Point having a beer, you decide to go up to your house on the back of the property, which is in Ideal Township, same piece of property, to get your beer, you've gone from an urban community to a rural community. And if you cross the street, you're in a rural community. And if next door happens to be an Ideal Township, some of which are, and Your Honors, I've brought a blow-up of the map, which makes it a little bit easier to see. All these properties...
Council, I will have to ask you to not use an exhibit. We don't allow that here.
All right. Well, it's an exhibit. I just made it bigger so you can see it. It's an exhibit in the documents.
Yep. And we've reviewed the record.
Right. But it. I don't know how you could be here in a rural community and next door, they're in an urban community. That makes no sense. And I think the most important thing to me, Your Honor, is this provision in the statute, which, of course, they don't address, which is in the appeal portion of the statute, 4107, is that the district court can look at what is in the best interests of the community affected. I find it, frankly, Your Honor, a little insulting that you can have 100 households along that road, you could have 90%+ of the people who along that road support it. Nobody who's affected objected. Nobody along the road, either side, objected. Nobody in the city objected. Nobody in the county objected. I think 90 people who reside along a road have some idea of what's in their best interests. And yet the ALJ says, nope, or not the ALJ, the district court says, nope, I don't need to consider that. I don't even need to discuss it. I'm just going to rubber stamp what the ALJ did. I think that there's something wrong with that, that you can't listen to the people along the road. Many have been there years. I've been there 20 years. Many of them have families who've been there since the 1920s. And yet the city is going to decide for you what's in the best interest of where you live. And finally, Your Honor, this property is so important to the city that if you go to the city website, originally it didn't include our property. It says the city starts at the south shore of Lake Ossawinamakee. If you go to the comprehensive plan, it says it starts at the south shore of Ossawinamakee. And if you go to the comprehensive plan, which the statute specifically says you should look at, the property at issue was originally classified as low-density property. And underneath it says houses will be built according to quasi-rural standards. And once a comprehensive plan is adopted for the future under the, what's called the FLUM, the future use of the property, it's either going to be low-density or it's going to be wooded residential. Again, if it's low density under the new comprehensive plan adopted just before the hearing, it says residences need to be built according to quasi-rural standards. If you go to the wooded residential, it says it's usually standards that are rural residential, which is what the rest of the county is and the other side of the road is.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And with that, time is up, and I just want to take a moment to thank Council for argument today as well as for the briefing. It was very helpful. This case is submitted, and we will have an opinion out to you within the statutory deadline. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.